Yoga Vashishta, Part 4 by Swami Suryadevananda. Prayer before study. Salutations to that reality in which all the elements and all the animate and inanimate beings shine as if they have an independent existence, and in which they exist for a time and into which they merge. Salutations to that consciousness which is the source of the apparently distinct threefold divisions of knower, knowledge and known, seer, sight and seen, doer, doing and deed. Salutations to that bliss absolute, the ocean of bliss, which is the life of all beings, whose happiness and unfoldment is derived from the shower of spray from that ocean of bliss. The last time, we covered the four gatekeepers to the realm of freedom or moksha. The first was shama or self-control. This is natural if one has seen the danger and resulting problems resulting from lack of self-control, and a struggle only if one does not have a solid and stable platform to rest on. We will look into this one a little more today. The second was vicharana. Vicharana is the spirit of inquiry, which is a mind that is constantly observed, relentlessly and without remission. Here again, the difficulty lies in not first clearly seeing the danger of an unexamined life. Third was santosha or contentment. It is a renunciation of all cravings for what is not obtained without seeking actively, and to be at the same time satisfied with what comes naturally. So it sort of has two components to it. A renunciation of all cravings, remember that word, for what is not obtained without seeking actively, and at the same time, a sense of satisfaction with whatever comes naturally. And the last was satsanga. Satsanga is not a program, though it can be in the shape of a program. Satsanga is taking the hand of the good in every way, all the time, as a companion and guide on the journey towards self-realization. Today, our topics are the task on hand, in the heart first, self-control next, and we see self-control back again from the last time, then inquiry. So what we have here is a clear outline for our practice or foundation. What is to be done and the order in which it is to be done, so it has deep roots, to be seen in the heart first, self-control next, and then inquiry. Let us go into each one of these. Greetings. We start by taking up the first topic we have today, which is the task on hand. What is it exactly that needs to be done? Sort of like our very basic fundamental starting point. And this starting point has three sections to it. One, to live in such a way that every moment we see our conditioning along with what is out there or unfolding in the world or events out there and are able to do what needs to be done. That is the first basic thing. Can we bring about this thing? So we are not listening to the promptings of our conditioning all the time, but we're able to see that, what's out there. We're able to see this or what's in here. And in spite of all of that, to do what is best, what needs to be done. The second part comes naturally as a byproduct of the first, to weaken the existing conditioning by disuse. When we are aware of what's out there and what's in here, and act or do what needs to be done without being swayed by our likes, our dislikes, our tendencies, and this inner murmur, We weaken existing conditioning by disuse, and we strengthen our ability to deal with things as they are by actual use. So this inner intelligence is awakened in that process. And this is what we are going to need in the hours of meditation, because that awakened intelligence is to be turned upon itself to look at its source to know who we are. And this is an examined life, to live in such a way that in each moment we are aware of the outer and the inner. We do what needs to be done in spite of the urges and promptings of the inner. The second part, we said, was to weaken the existing conditioning by disuse and to strengthen the inner intelligence by its use or engagement. The third part was to use the awakened intelligence in the hours of meditation by turning it on itself or on its source to know who we are. So this is a shift in focus from our normal way of living, which is usually completely focused on the outer. We don't generally see the inner, or we are not generally aware of in the inner. And the way things change is, instead of looking at what I need to do next, what needs to be done. The I is taken out of the equation and it is gradually weakened. Don't worry, you're still going to do what needs to be done, but you're going to take selfishness out of the equation. What room has selfishness got anyways? You might think that it protects our interests, but then look at it. Suppose I have a task that involves lifting something from here and putting it there. Let's just take a menial task like that and say that's my job. I can do that and think someone appreciates me, someone doesn't appreciate me, and I would only do little or more. But if I do what needs to be done, take that from there and put it there in the most meticulous and thoughtful and careful and deliberate manner, it's only going to get done better. So there's no point in bringing the I into action. This goes on not just in the workplace, but in the home, in our relationships, in every single thing that we do. Conditioning interferes and therefore gets strengthened. When we take conditioning out of it, it weakens by disuse. Let things be as they are. Why should things out there affect me in any manner whatsoever? This doesn't mean that I become a cold stone and go through life monotone. Not at all. Let things be out there. Why should they affect me? When they affect me, they have the ability to also affect my joy, my happiness, these things are very natural to me. Is there a better way of living that we can still do what needs to be done, but free of our reactions to it? And this is what we must find every day, all the time. See, usually our focus is on the outside. We look at things and we are constantly focused on what's out there, but also a small inner thing. How is it going to work best for me? Now, it's the second part of the equation that we are very concerned with. To do what needs to be done is natural and should be done. But why should in the best of my interests come into the equation? And does it really promote or help my interests at all? When I constantly look at this my interest and what's in it for me, I'm not even seeing what's out there, less giving it my 100%. So, in any case, it's not going to turn out as good as if I were able to give it my 100%. If I can be focused on what's out there and be aware of what's in here and do what needs to be done, ignoring the promptings of within by selecting what needs to be done and identifying with the situation or standing with the situation, it's going to be wholehearted effort. When we do this for a while, nothing changes outside, so to say, but a tremendous transformation takes place within. The inner promptings that were there of the ego start weakening. The whole mechanism of our ego depends on giving it attention. One must be aware of it, and one must be able to act and work in spite of it. That is how this ego weakens, and that is at the root of all of our problems, all of our bondage, all of our limitations, all of our confusion, and that is what blocks our peace finally. So can we do this? This is the task on hand. Now this brings us to the second point. How do we approach this? Do we buy something? Do we do something? Do we get something? What do we need to do to make this happen? My friends, the very first thing is to be aware of the danger of leading an unexamined life. To know that in an unexamined life, we hurt and we hurt others. To be able to clearly see this, that is not okay. There must be a better way to live by which we don't hurt and by which we don't cause hurt. Both these have to become very important. So it has to be seen in the heart first. And it is much easier if we have a good, solid foundation. When you see it in the heart and you aspire for something better, it is there in that aspiration or that field of aspiration that we are going to sow the seeds of something better. If this is not done, it results in struggle later, because the inner stays unchanged and we bring change about in a habit, which is doing. Change has to come about in being or who we are. Then doing reflects the inner change automatically. If we simply change the way we do things, then it's going to be cosmetic at best. And sometimes while we are conscious of it, it may stick. And sometimes, or most of the time, or a good amount of time, when we are not conscious of it, the inner urges are still going to be there. To change within, the inner intelligence has to see the danger of status quo. By this, I hurt and I hurt others, and this is not okay. If we have seen that just this clearly, that this is not okay anymore or not acceptable anymore, then a new way will be found. It's as simple as that. And all the disturbing thought waves cease when we stop paying attention to them, because our consciousness is a different channel by which we engage life. So there must be this change of heart. This inner change will bring about outer change. And our agitation, when our agitation is let go, when all our disturbing tendencies have let go, we see that disturbance and agitation is not there on the outside. Sometimes we think, there's a lot of agitation in my workplace or in this part of my life or that part of my life. Or people use the word tension. There's a lot of tension. But my friends, there's no tension outside. Because if there were, it would apply equally to one person and another. Somebody may be walking through life smoothly, and in that same area where we live, somebody else may be going through a lot of tension. So tension is in our heart. Tension is not outside in things as they are. To be able to be aware of all the inner promptings, all the urges, all the chaos, be able to see what's out there, and to do what needs to be done constantly, because there is a change of heart, and that change of heart insists on finding a better way, sticking with a better way, and acting in a better way, doing in a better way. Better conditions will follow naturally. We spoke about change of heart first, and this brings us to our third topic, which is self-control. Self-control is often looked at as some kind of punitive thing. Self-control, my friends, is not punitive, it is positive. In punitive, there's a sort of denial. But if we make a better choice and we ignore or override a choice that is not as good, how does punitive come in? What is punitive about it? Say you would like to save some money. That naturally involves in being careful about your spending habits and being wise about your investments. When you are careful about your spending habits or frivolous spending and wise about your investments, how is that a denial in any way when what you are doing is designed to get you more? And self-control is just this much: a better choice in all things at all times. That's it. And so we usually look at self-control and say, well, on one hand, if I do this, on the other hand, and think of things like that. And we're not being very clear when we think of things in that manner. To simply think of what's best, what promotes my inner goodness, what promotes my wisdom, what is the best thing or the good thing to do in every situation out there, it'll become very clear that some of the urges, or a good portion of them, are not in our best interest. And overriding them becomes natural without suppression, because there's simply a better choice that is made every time. So there must be this change of heart first. Self-control is difficult unless there is a straight change of heart. It is a sort of tug of war. And what is this change of heart? Very simple, my friends. You must want better. You must see that status quo is just not good enough. I hurt, and I hurt others. And you must want more, to the point where you start watching yourself. You are aware of these urges, and you are not only ready and willing, but enthusiastic about a better way. And a better way will be found. You've heard of the saying, blossom where planted. My friends, I would add one small word to it. Blossom where planted first. Don't be in a hurry to uproot and change things externally, because they may end up being cosmetic at best. And you may have to keep doing them and keep feeling the push and pull within. Change within. Bring about a revolution in this mind within. Make a sankalpa or an ideation, a firm, determined ideation that this better way will be found and be reflected in all things that I do at all times. It's not that difficult, but this little thing will give you a lot. When you make that sankalpa or ideation, or firm resolve, perhaps a better definition of sankalpa, a firm inner resolve of a better way must be found, then a better way will be found. For that, a sort of mechanism gets activated called vigilance, because one must watch the promptings of habit or habitual ways, along with seeing what's out there. The inner and outer must be seen in the same field of observation. And this vigilance, when it becomes activated, is aware of the outer and inner, and self-control becomes natural, not because it is some form of suppression, because it is simply a better choice in all things at all times. A better choice is better for me, it is better for the situation, it's a win-win situation for all. So self-control naturally is wisdom in action. And you can live amongst all and with everything without being affected by them. When you know deep down in your heart that in every situation, the very best that can be done will be done. And that's all that you can do. So there are no regrets, there is no remorse, there is no second feelings or doubts. You remove all this confusion from your mind. If you simply resolve to see clearly what's out there, to be aware of clearly what's in here, to be determined with resolve to do what needs to be done because it needs to be done without the interference of any inner prompting or motive, and to stand with the situation, with things out there, as opposed to opposed to the situation. My friends, unless these first three, which is a clear understanding and a wholesale or wholesome subscription to the task on hand, and then to be able to see it in the heart first, not only to accept it, but to resolve it, that this better way will be done, and its resulting natural self-control, until these three are done, then inquiry cannot begin. You cannot begin inquiring when the waters are all turbulent. See, my friends, you cannot even see a reflection in a pond if the waters are agitated, can you? Or a river. You have to have a calm and placid lake or a pond for your reflection to be seen. So for our true nature to be seen in the hours of meditation, we have to have a mind in which all disturbance or disturbing waves have ceased, a cool, calm, and placid mind. This mind has to see into itself to see its source, its true nature. This inquiry does not happen until the conditions are ripe. No different than flowers do not blossom and fruit do not come until the conditions are right. Everything has to be right for fruition or flowering to happen. The weather, the seasons, all of that. And so for this inner flowering also, the conditions need to be made right. And just like farmers, we have to do all the basic things first. Be clear of the task, be clear of all the things that need to be done, to see it in our heart first with firm resolve, to be able to do what needs to be done without interference of the mind, and to weaken, thereby weaken, the old ways and strengthen newer direct ways which are without limitation, without all these notions and confusion. Until we have that clear mind that results from that, meditation is going to be some form of jugglery at best. Knowledge of truth or reflection of one's true nature does not come from any book teaching. Books cannot teach you about this. It comes by one's direct observation into oneself. I have to look directly within me to be able to see who I am. Before we look within us in the hours of meditation, we have to be able to look within us in the hours of our day-to-day functions. If we can't do it there, we're not going to be able to do it in meditation. We have to not just be able, but enthusiastic about doing it there. So, my friends, this naturally involves some adjustments that we have to make. We can't do this multiple tasking and too many things with too much activity because we're just not going to see the mind clearly. One thing at one time, done well with all one's being. If we do this, we'll see the thoughts connected with that, the promptings connected with that, and we'll know just what needs to be done in each moment, in spite of all the urges and promptings or conditioning, and to be able to weaken the mechanism of conditioning. The question comes down to just this. Do we want to shake off our conditioning, and are we willing to lead an examined life continuously all the time? When we see the inner agitation and learn to do what needs to be done in spite of it, we weaken this inner agitation, my friends. We let go of all this noise of the mind. Gradually, these, as they weaken by disuse, that mind becomes thinner and thinner and clearer and clearer. When it becomes thinner, the natural joy of the soul, the natural joy of your true nature, starts reflecting up to the surface. We have grown too used to all this agitation And we often feel, well, I've got to get a break. I've got to find some peace of mind. I've got to find some release. I've got to do something for some release. There's too much tension in my life. Well, my friends, let go of the cause of that tension and discover that peace is already there. Peace is not something that comes from a change of scenery. And what kind of peace is that which is going to fade away when that scenery reverts back to something else? It has to be lasting. So, when you do not participate in any attempted agitation, the agitation weakens and stops naturally. We participate in this. It's just like stirring up the hornet's nest. When you stir up the hornet's nest or a beehive, the bees get all active. And we stir up our mind constantly, and these likes and dislikes get active, and they destroy our peace. Can we stop stirring it by being aware of it? And can we start doing things in spite of it? Are we willing to do this? We can do it. The question is, are we willing to do it so firmly that we activate a mechanism that nourishes it, sustains it, and empowers it? Are we ready to weaken that mind completely? So from this arises knowledge of one's true nature. Knowledge of one's true nature doesn't come from a book, as we've covered earlier. One's true nature is just who we are. And who we are has been crowded by the transparencies of what we like and what we don't like. All of that stuff is on top of who we are. Can we let go of what doesn't need to be? It's just like a sculptor. He doesn't add on to a block, say a block of granite when he's carving a statue, but chisels away to reveal what's already there or what he had seen in his mind's eye. Our true nature, which is joy, knowledge, happiness, all of that, is already there. But can we chisel away? And we don't have to sit with a hammer and chisel. Can we be aware of it and learn to function in spite of it? Then in the hours of meditation, it will be a deeper assault on this conditioning, because then it's going to be a straight dealing with all the depth of it, exactly where it's situated. But can we do this in life first, before we talk about the hours of meditation? And if we can resolve to do this, joy, happiness, peace await the person that's willing and able. Friends, we've talked about four things today. The task on hand. And in leading an examined life, to see things as they are and do what needs to be done in spite of the mind. Can we find a better way to be and a better way to live? It has to be in that order. A better way to be first. Living is an expression of who we are. Living is not a skill in doing things while there's a degradation or we are oblivious to who we are. A flower flowers naturally. And if there is some beauty within or goodness within, it too will respond to life naturally. So to see things for what they are and to do what needs to be done, this involves that word called vigilance. That was the first point, was clarity of task. The second point was to see it in the heart first and to bring about this resolve deep down at what we call gut level. Exactly where we are wedded, so to say, to the ways of habit. We have to see it at that level that by habit, I hurt and I hurt others. When I respond by habit, when I respond by conditioning, when I respond by my likes and dislikes, I hurt and I hurt others. You'd be quite surprised, my friends, even when you respond to your likes, hurt is felt. If we try to satisfy our likes all the time, there's restlessness, because we would like for that to happen, because there is joy in that, which means there is no joy now. Joy will come when that happens. So likes and dislikes are both loaded with trouble, with confusion, with chaos. Can we let go of that by embracing in our heart a better way of doing this, of doing things, to deal with things as they are, when they happen, and to do what needs to be done in spite of all these likes and dislikes? We'll still do what needs to be done, and we'll do it much better. So this involves a little bit of self-control. And self-control is not punitive, it is positive. Because to not do what hurts, or what limits, or what's less, and to do what is a better option, is not any form of denial, or punitiveness, or punishment. It's simply a better choice. Self-control is a better choice all the time. And that is a clear self-control. And when we do not have self-control, we are not in charge and better choices don't follow. Habit is in charge. Then inquiry. Until these first three have laid a solid foundation, my friends, inquiry does not happen. Existing conditioning and the grip of existing conditioning are broken by these first three. Finding a better way, seeding that in the heart of the core of one's being. So it's not so much, it may be conscious at first, but it becomes the way of doing things, which is to see what needs to be done, to do what needs to be done with all one's heart and mind. And self-control becomes natural. Being aware of what's out there, being aware of what's in here, being able to do what needs to be done in spite of the promptings of within. Simply better choices all the time. These three will weaken the conditioning of the mind and still it by draining the energy of the mind. Then the task, which is turning the mind on itself in the hours of meditation for self-inquiry, becomes natural and much easier. Today, we concluded the important teachings of the second chapter of the Yoga Vasishtha. Next time, we continue with the important teachings in the third chapter. Friends, thank you for joining me today. To download this video, its audio, or PDF summary, kindly visit suryadevananda.org. Thank you.